Are you ready to talk Padres baseball?
We've got you covered.
Today, the Padres will be closing out their road trip to Oakland against the A's, and our host Jesse Agler will be breaking it all down with no help from producer Blooper.
Blooper, how many games under 500?
What?
Oh, okay. It's been helpful. Best in the business.
Jesse will, however, be getting some aid on today's program from Bill Center.
I'm Jesse's... He's the organ grinder. I'm the monkey in this program.
Now, broadcasting from the AMR studio, it's Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines, with your hosts, Jesse Agler and Bill Center.
Welcome to Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines. Today is Thursday, June 18th. It is 11:30 in the morning on the Pacific Coast, which is a little bit weird for us, but you got day baseball up in Oakland. Petco Park is where we are, the Padres at the O.co Coliseum inside the AMR studio. Welcome to Padres Social Hour. Lots to talk about. 16-2 last night. Alexi Amarista pitches. Today, Derek Norris will start at first base for the first time in his major league career. Yonder Alonso will start for the second time this season at third base. And John Baker is going to call into the program. And you go, that John Baker? Yeah, that John Baker, the catcher, who played a couple of seasons with the Padres a couple of years ago. He wrote what I think is a really good, thought-provoking piece yesterday for Just a Bit Outside, foxsports.com, about those unwritten rules and the bat flips and the celebrations and the fist pumps and sort of how all of that fits into the world of baseball. So John Baker has turned into a writer. Bill, watch your back.
No, it's a really good piece, and it's one of those pieces when you start, it goes in a totally different direction of when you start to read it, of where the body is and the point he wants to make. And it is a good point.
The old switcheroo.
It's a very, I'd say read it.
Yeah.
Absolutely read it.
No, you go to foxsports.com, just a bit outside, you find it, you read it in the next couple of minutes, and then in about 15 minutes, he's going to call us on the telephone, and we're going to discuss it with him. So really, the whole thing comes together very nicely. We'll hear from Pat Murphy in a couple of minutes as well. And as always, the show is interactive. I want to remind people about that. On Twitter, you can use the hashtag PadresSH to join the conversation. Tag your tweet with that hashtag. You can also go to Padres.com/social hour to watch or listen to the show and also chat live with Becky, who is the moderator, and also with other fans. You know the age-old question in baseball, Bill? The age-old question, would you rather lose a heartbreaker or would you rather get your butt kicked? And I don't know that there's a right answer to this, but the last 2 days against the Oakland Athletics certainly provide both ends of the spectrum. 2 days ago, here at Petco Park, a 6-5 loss where they score off of Craig Kimbrel in a tie game in the top of the ninth inning. And last night, a good old-fashioned butt-kicking, 16-2. You've got a position player pitching, the third of the night, by the way, in Major League Baseball.
Right.
Bill, as a fan, Blooper, as a fan, everybody out there, which one is preferable? They're both awful. They're both terrible. Which is better?
Except the last game here, you had a chance to win that game. To me, that always leaves a little stronger pain than if you go out and it's really one-sided. And then, there is one thing about last night. As bad as it was, it ended on a note where you could actually smile with Amarista getting the last out as the emergency pitcher, which, to me, as bad as that was, to be able to walk off the field with something of a really meaningless but a smile on your face.
And that's the point of that, right? That's
right.
Why you see position players pitching in these 16-2 kinds of games. And it took him all of two pitches to induce Billy Burns, who I feel like hasn't made it out in 4 days, to fly out to right field. What was the fastball? Was coming in low 80s, I believe, is where that was.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you can. But it's more like he's got a great changeup.
Dennis Lynn of the Union Tribune tweeted last night. He asked him if it was a changeup, and apparently Alexi cut him off. No, that's my fastball. That is the fastball. It's just what it comes in at. But, no, that's why you do that. That's why if you're Pat Murphy or Buddy Black or any other manager, that's why when the game is miserable and the other team has batted around twice in the last two innings and it's completely out of reach, you bring in a guy like that. A, I guess you're not trying to burn another arm in the bullpen.
Right.
But B, it does loosen it up a little bit, I think.
Bit.
And it gives you a different taste in your mouth going into the clubhouse than if you would have just left Corey Mazzoni out there for another guy and he eventually gets that third out.
Yeah, I don't know if he could have gotten it. Corey Mazzoni last night, I don't know what is going on with Corey Mazzoni, because at AAA he has been absolutely outstanding, and up here he has, it's just not one game. It's been game after game after game where he has really struggled. And I don't know what the answer is. He's a young man. Maybe it's just he's trying too hard. But, boy, he is struggling.
Absolutely. Pat Murphy said after the game, you know, he had a talk with Corey Mazzoni, as you would imagine. That's a really, really, really tough night in the big leagues for anybody. And, I mean, there was a moment even where you're feeling bad, right? You know, it's like the boxer on the ropes, and he's just taking punch after punch after punch, and you're waiting for somebody to throw in the towel. And, of course, in baseball, you can't do that. Either you got to come out and get the guy, or he's got to work out of it on his own. And here's what Pat Murphy said after the game about talking to the relief pitcher, Corey Mazzoni.
I'm just talking about a young pitcher trying to find himself in the major leagues, and doesn't seem like anything's going right. Every ball they hit is right in between two guys, and if they hit it off the end, it's over the shorts. You know, it's over the infielders, and you know, Corey's a great kid with a good arm, and things aren't going right for him. And I just told him that this is a test, you know, and your numbers are going to be terrible this year, no matter what. You know, now you have to. Now you have to find the mental toughness, and you have to find it inside of yourself to say, hey, I'm going to respond to this. And that's what we're faced with, you know. That's we're all faced with that sometime, and I think Corey will do it and hopefully become a usable major league pitcher someday.
There you go, Pat Murphy. That last part's kind of telling.
Right. You know what I like about it, where he went out, he told him that your numbers are going to be terrible this year, and there's nothing you're going to do. So don't worry about looking at your numbers. They're not going to get better. Just concern yourself with getting some guys out.
When you come out to the mound, don't look up at the scoreboard, because the ERA is going to be, for the next several appearances, between 15 and 20.
Right.
You know, most likely. So don't even think about it. Just focus on looking forward and go get it. And that last comment about you're hoping that he turns into a usable major league pitcher means, I think, right now he isn't. And it's not a knock on Corey Mazzoni. This isn't a personal shot, you know, being taken right there. This is a guy that is struggling at this level right now, and obviously will have the opportunity to work out of it one way or another. Obviously, you don't want to talk too much about last night here. There's really only so much you can say. 16-2, Alexi Amarista pitching, Corey Mazzoni unable to complete that inning. But I thought there was one other comment from Pat Murphy that was interesting and maybe telling and certainly worth revisiting from after the game last night. And he was asked, you know, what you can take away from a game like last night's.
Sometimes games happen like this, guys, it's unfortunate. But I think a little bit, you guys may laugh at this, but I think a little bit, it's a little bit of a cleansing, you know what I mean? Like, you just get this stuff out. And maybe it's the yesterday's game was so tough because nothing went our way. And kid makes a great play, robs a home run. And they're playing so loose and with such freedom that everything's going right for them, you know. And take nothing away from how good they are and how good they're playing at this point in the season. But, maybe this is where it'll – maybe this world will come together.
You know, and it can happen. I have a funny – when I was in junior college at Grossmont College, we went up, played a doubleheader at Citrus. This is 1964. We won the first game 24-3. Lost the second game 2-1. It happens in baseball. I mean, it does happen in baseball. 16-2 at the major league level is not something you want to see, but it happens.
It does, and I liked the cleansing comment, you know, from Pat Murphy.
Yeah.
All right, hey, we got it out of our system.
Right.
We all got to watch the 5'5" Alexi Amarista go in and pitch a third of an inning, and now, okay, let's put it behind it. And maybe the day game today, even better, you know, than
because
anything else.
And you walk away from that game not wondering about, gosh, if we had gotten the bunt down here or if we had gotten a hit there, it would have been a lot of – no, it wouldn't have been any different.
No, you're certainly not worried about any of that.
Right.
You're not going, man, that one at bat in the fifth inning – No, you're just pretty much putting it behind you. So that was the sentiment from the manager, Pat Murphy. Some sentiment, too, from last night's catcher and this afternoon's first baseman, Derek Norris. After the game last night, Derek tweeted, "Sometimes it's the darkest just before the dawn. Good things lie ahead for this club. Hashtag Padres believe." It's kind of poetic from Derek Norris.
I saw that on last night on the on my Twitter, and it's I like that. I mean, I really do honestly like that tweet. And then, yeah, sometimes it is darkest before the dawn, but sooner or later you got to get this thing rolling.
Sooner or later, emphasis on sooner.
Yeah, right.
I think that's exactly right, and that's what, you know, this Padre team's got to be focused on. They'll send Ian Kennedy out to the hill this afternoon against Kendall Graveman of the Oakland Athletics, and then you leave this interleague play nonsense alone for a couple of days, and you move forward to some divisional games over the weekend against the Arizona Diamondbacks, and then back to the Bay Area to take on the San Francisco Giants. And there's got to be a springboard at some point.
Right.
You know, for this Padre team.
And I think, yes, and I think it has to come before the All-Star break. I don't think that you've got to get a roll here before the All-Star break.
That's what the Padres are going to be trying to do, and I agree with that certainly, not only because you want to start trying to make up some games in the standings, but also because that trade deadline looms not too far after the All-Star break. And if you're going to make a run, you got to put yourself in position prior to the trade deadline. Otherwise, we all know what can happen.
There's going to be some major decisions to be made between the All-Star break and the trade deadline as to what this team's going to do.
No question. No question about it. All right, we mentioned that you can join us via Twitter using the hashtag PadresSH. A couple of questions have come in that are good to get to. Reminder also that we'll have John Baker join us coming up in a few minutes, and we'll talk to him about the piece he wrote for FoxSports.com yesterday. At BoltsFan3 says, as we discussed, would you rather have last night's game or the day before? I'd rather get a butt kicking. Close losses hurt. Getting your butt kicked motivates the players to turn things around.
I'd agree with that. Okay. I really do. I mean, and down the road in baseball, you get your fannies whacked, and you might even be able to laugh about it and remember what happened, and you don't ever laugh about a close loss.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And I think I agree. It wasn't fun as it was happening.
No, it's not.
But it's probably, from a mental standpoint, better than, you know, what happened the previous day here against the A's. Sharky has a question, kind of alluding to what we were talking about and the trade deadline and all the big picture things that may or may not take place. And he says, if the Padres do turn this season around and manage to make the playoffs, do you think Pat Murphy will be manager next season?
If the Padres turn it around and make the playoffs, I think it will be very hard not to invite Pat Murphy back next year. This will be their first time in the playoffs since 2006. And if you were to turn around and say, hey, nice job, Pat, but we're replacing you, an awful lot of fans and everybody else would not be understanding.
Yeah, it wouldn't make a ton of sense. I think there are very few certainties when it comes to this situation. But if the Padres, who are now, you know, a couple of games under 500 and scuffling a bit, if they do turn it around and make it to the playoffs, I would be shocked if Pat Murphy was not the full-time, no longer interim manager.
Really good way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely stunned. So let's hope that Pat Murphy is
We're all hoping that Pat Murphy is the manager next year, because that would be good news all the way around.
Exactly. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we expect to have John Baker with us, the former Padre catcher, who was with the Cubs last season, wrote a really thought-provoking piece on playing the game the right way at FoxSports.com. If you haven't checked it out yet, we've tweeted the link a couple of times. You can read that during the break, and then we'll talk to John about that and also what's going on with him. As your hometown pet retailer, Petco is proud to partner with the Padres and with Petco Park. So thank you, San Diego, for sharing in our passion for pets and baseball. Petco, the power of together. 12:40 first pitch in Oakland this afternoon with Bill Center. I'm Jesse Agler. We'll take a break. John Baker joins us next. Padres Social Hour presented by United.
We're back to the AMR studio located in the Western Metal Supply Company building. It's more of Padres Social Hour.
Welcome back to Padres Social Hour with Bill Center. I'm Jesse Agler. We're live from the AMR studio at Petco Park, under an hour away from first pitch in Oakland. Padres and the Atleticos coming up. We're going to step aside from last night's 16-2 loss for a few minutes. I don't think anybody will mind that, and we're going to go big picture baseball here. And what I think is really one of the most sort of intriguing and compelling storylines going on in the big leagues the last couple of seasons, and it's this whole the playing the game the right way, quote unquote, and the unwritten rules and bat flips and everything that goes with it. And former Padre catcher John Baker wrote a really thought-provoking piece on all of this for FoxSports.com yesterday. I hope you've checked it out by now. If you haven't, you can find the link on his Twitter, at ManBearWolf, great Twitter handle. And he joins us now on the Cholula Hotline. Hey, John, we appreciate it, man. First of all, hope all is well, and thanks for taking a few minutes for us this morning.
Yeah, I've got plenty of free time right now. It's kind of sad when the career winds up like this and you find yourself at home during the summer. But I'm enjoying being at home during the summer, and I'm having a lot of time to think about kind of that big picture baseball stuff.
Well, that's what you're doing, and you did a really good job taking those thoughts and translating them into writing. I hope we see more of it from you, and you're always welcome to Padres Social Hour if you're looking for things to do. But what inspired you to write this specific, you know, piece for FoxSports.com and sort of, you know, going into your experience in the Dominican winter ball and seeing sort of the difference in the baseball culture there as opposed to here?
Well, two things mainly kind of inspired me to write that piece. The first one was the home run that Junior Lake hit off of Dan Heron in Miami. And him, you know, kind of standing there and walking and flipping his bat. And then the Marlins dugout was very upset afterwards. And there was a lot of chatter on the internet that I was reading about people's differing opinions. The second thing was watching my nephew's high school baseball games. They're in the playoffs here in Northern California. And I was watching them play. And I started to notice all this behavior that wasn't happening when I was in high school on the field. Guys celebrating doubles at second base with their, you know, whatever they are, deer antlers, or clapping and swinging their hips around. And I started thinking about it. I'm like, man, we never thought about this when I was a kid in high school. Stuff is changing, and it's getting to the high school level, the little league level, and it's clearly celebrated when we watch the highlight shows on television. So it kind of got me thinking about what I actually thought about what playing the game the right way is.
Well, do you think that it's John, Bill Center here, and good talking to you again.
You too, Bill.
Which, by the way, this gives you a little time to get classical gas down, as we've talked about before.
The impossible guitar song.
Right, exactly. But you can do it. If anybody can do it, you can do it. Where do you – I mean – but there are times where some celebrations are fun to watch. Other ones, you know, in my mind, even cross the line. Where do you really, you know, do you have a line that you can draw that, you know, you think celebrations, or do you have to take everyone on its own and try to reason who's doing it and why?
Yeah, I think it's more along those lines. But, again, it's a very gray area that I think just generally needs to be discussed. It's funny, I was looking through old baseball GIFs, you know, those little animated videos, and I found a couple videos of Lou Gehrig, and I saw him hitting a home run and kind of walking towards the dugout. It looked what you would see on Baseball Tonight right now. So it's been around for a long time, especially in the United States. It's getting highlighted more and more now when we have this kind of influx of different cultures coming in and playing baseball and how they play baseball. If you watch Asian baseballs, you see bats flying everywhere.
Right.
Korea and Japan. And it's okay. You watch Latin American baseball, specifically in those countries, and you see different behavior. You see what people have learned. And so I think that there's a responsibility of those players coming here to learn the game as we play it in the United States and make those adjustments when they start to make people upset. But my main point is that we do need to look at every single instance individually, take what we can learn from there, and then communicate to those players if we actually believe that that behavior is improper or if it's outside of the box too far, so that they know and they understand why other players are getting mad.
Babe Ruth, by the way, was one to really admire his home runs. If you ever watch any film of Babe Ruth, when he took the swing, he would stand there and he'd watch it, and then he'd leave the batter's box.
Well, I think that's such a good point, because that's something that John pointed out in his piece, which is that the guys that generally admire their home runs the most are the guys that hit the most home runs, those big power-hitting sluggers. So the argument is always act like you've been there before, but then, John, the guys that have been there over and over and over again are generally, it seems, the guys that are standing there and watching them at the plate.
Yeah, they have a signature move. You know, Sammy Sosa had his hop. Mark McGwire had the big, you know, double fist pump and the punch to the stomach. Griffey had that beautiful swing and the ability to just kind of stand there and watch in home plate, drop the bat. Bonds did some both ridiculous and incredible moves after home runs, spins and claps and points straight up to the air. I mean, those are the guys that hit the most home runs.
You ran hard. Yeah. I remember that. When you hit a home run, you took off.
Yeah, that's how I learned how to play baseball from my dad. You know, I always ran, and I also never knew if I hit it over the fence when I hit it, so I figured I'd better run in case I might be able to get to third base. And that was never really a big part of who I was as a player, and I started noticing it more and more in professional baseball from other players and how mad it would make some guys and how other guys just didn't really care at all.
John Baker is with us on Twitter at ManBearWolf. I certainly don't want to ask you to speak for all of baseball, but in your opinion, what's the balance here? Where would you like to see it? Where do you think, you know, we can sort of, you know, balance some of the theatrics and the excitement that you see from some guys versus the old school preferences of others in the major leagues today?
You know, I don't know if there is a balance, and I think it's part of the thing that's it's intriguing about watching a baseball game for me is how are people going to respond. You know, when you see, you think about the David Ortiz and David Price in the past, you know, where David Ortiz hit some big home runs off of David Price, hit some home runs in the playoffs against the Rays, and then years later he gets hit and they keep going back and forth. That to me is interesting, trying to unravel that sort of mystery of baseball. It's part of to me what makes baseball exciting. You know, I enjoy watching Angel Pagan spit his gum at Derek Norris, and I don't know if he actually spit his gum or what made Norris mad, but to me that's an intriguing part of baseball. The same thing with how we celebrate once we've done. But like I said, we have to take into account where these people are from, how they learned how to play the game, and is their intention when they do this move to show up somebody else and to disrespect another player, or is it to celebrate either their achievement or their opportunity?
You know, you could also, I mean, just some of the celebrations on walk-off wins. I mean, some of them really get, they are extreme. And I've wondered sometimes when you're walking off the field and you see people like, that wasn't how it used to be done in old-time baseball.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, as a player, I used to like to sit in the dugout when the other team won or walked us off in a game. And my good friend of mine, Ryan Kalish, and I were talking about this last year. We opened the season in Pittsburgh with the Cubs, and we got walked off the first two games. And my point, when I sat there and they were celebrating, you know, and that was a big celebration for the Pirates. They, you know, Neil Walker walks off his hometown team on opening day against the Cubs, against the rivals. And we're sitting there, I said, it's important for us to watch this celebration because losing is fun. Losing is not fun, excuse me. Winning is really fun. Losing sucks. But watch the other team celebrate and try to suck in whatever positivity you can from that and remember how bad you feel when this happens. And use that as motivation as you move forward to try to win the game, John, try to prepare a little bit better.
John Baker is with us. I want to ask you about something semi-off topic, I guess, position players pitching. I believe we've seen it from you in your career. We saw it from Alexi Amarista last night in Oakland. And we were having the, you know, semi-serious conversation about it at the beginning of the show today and how it can kind of, you know, change the taste in your mouth at the end of that game, as opposed to 16-2 when you're just upset. It's 16-2 and you got to watch something somewhat entertaining. Is that kind of the point, I guess, when we see these sorts of things? And what can that do for the guys on the team?
Well, I think it definitely adds to morale. You know, you're going to get beat like that in baseball. You're going to lose games 16-2. You're going to have games where your starter has trouble getting out of the first inning and the bullpen's strapped. And you have to put a position player out there. It does definitely boost morale. I also like it because it's the worst at bat in baseball. I've never been more nervous in my career, minor leagues or major leagues, and I never did it in the big leagues, but batting against a position player to me is the most nerve-wracking experience in baseball. It's why I had confidence when I pitched last year, because I knew that that's the at-bat that you absolutely do not want, unless you're pitching against Wilson Ramos. He's the one guy who he has two home runs off position players. But I enjoyed pitching, and I'm sure that the entire team could kind of look beyond that, erase that 16-0 deficit or 16-2 loss, and look at the ninja pitching and saying, well, we're still playing a game. We're still having fun. Isn't this awesome that this guy's on the mound?
So when you're pitching as a position player, when you were out in the mound pitching, you thought you had the advantage over the hitter because he was actually more nervous about looking bad than you were?
100%.
Makes sense.
To, whatever competitive edge you have to, you know, put into your head when you go in to do something, that's how I took at it. And I thought, you know, I've thrown batting practice in the past. I've watched guys not hit the ball hard in batting practice for an entire day, for five rounds of seven swings off somebody throwing 60 miles an hour. So my thought when I got out on that mound was, if I can throw really bad batting practice to major league hitters, they're not going to hit the ball hard.
John Baker is with us, wrote that great piece, foxsports.com, yesterday, just a bit outside, about playing the game the right way and what that means to each individual player in the broader context of the world of baseball.
By the way, John, I just want to tell you, I really thought, I read it this morning. Actually, Jesse showed it to me. I hadn't seen it. And that was really thought-provoking. But, like, I've had a number of conversations with you over the years, and they've always been thought-provoking. So, and you started out one direction and went another way, and the more I got into it, I thought, hey, there are a lot of good points in here. You got to understand where a guy's come from and why he might be doing what he's doing.
Yeah, and I 100% agree with you, and I appreciate you finding me interesting. I sometimes get lost in my own head, and I feel like I'm kind of interesting, too.
Hey, definitely interesting. So is there going to be more writing in the future? What can we look out for here?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I there's been a lot of stuff I've thought about over my career that I've never had a chance to sit down and try to formulate some sort of coherent output about it. But one of the ones that I've really thought about a lot is performance-enhancing drugs and steroids. And I think that that's something I would really like to touch on. I think that anything controversial that seems to, I feel like we cover steroids, our media covers steroids, but we don't generally look at it from every possible angle. You know, my favorite author of all time is, or at least to read essay-wise, is Christopher Hitchens. And one of the things that he always would say is that if you don't understand your opponent's position, you know, you're not reading enough information. And I'd like to look at some of these issues from more than one perspective, kind of like I did with this past piece that I wrote, and really figure out how I feel. And I think that's what the best part about doing this stuff for me is I write all this stuff out. I kind of hone it into being coherent, and then I actually figure out what my own opinion is, because it constantly switches back and forth.
Very nice. John Baker has been on the Cholula Hotline. John, great to hear from you. Really enjoyed the piece, as we said. Hope everybody finds it on foxsports.com. And be in touch, man. We'll definitely keep an eye out for the things you write in the future, PED-related or otherwise.
All right. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Hey, don't be a stranger.
There you go.
I won't, Bill. Thank you.
There you go. John Baker on the Cholula Hotline. Cholula Hot Sauce will elevate the flavor of your food with its delicious blend of unique peppers and authentic spices. Cholula, the flavorful hot sauce with the iconic wooden cap and proud partner of the San Diego Padres. Good dude.
And intelligent, a very intellectual ball player, broke down, and we discussed some different things before, and he would take a really deep look into things. We were talking before that sometimes you would ask him a question, and he would just start talking, and it was everything you wanted to hang on, but he could go on for a long time on subjects. I really, really intelligent guy.
I was going to say, as a writer, I don't know that there's anything more you could ask for than somebody like that. It gives you plenty of material. So check out the piece, foxsports.com. Thanks again to John Baker for joining us. We'll take a break, come back, get to some of your questions on Twitter. Use that hashtag PadresSH. And also talk about some other stuff of note taking place around Major League Baseball. From the AMR studio at Petco Park, this is Padres Social Hour.
We're back to the show that gives you everything San Diego Padres. It's Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines.
Welcome back with Bill Center. I'm Jesse Agler. Thanks again to John Baker for joining us. Good dude with interesting thoughts. And I believe he was in spring training with the Mariners this year,
at least at a point.
Yeah, I think we saw him there. And obviously not playing right now, and that transition is often not a simple one for a guy. He was with the Cubs last season after 2 years here in San Diego, and the Marlins obviously before that. But, you know, making good use of this unexpected free time, I think, and I enjoyed reading what he had to write.
I always thought John Baker was the perfect backup catcher because, one, good guy in the clubhouse, smart, could come in at a split second and do a capable job, and wasn't one of those guys who was going to be sitting there in the corner wondering, why aren't you playing me more?
Yeah. That's perfect. Important.
Perfect backup catcher.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we've got the final game of this series against the A's coming up in about 30, 35 minutes from the Coliseum in Oakland. Ian Kennedy will be on the mound against Kendall Graveman. We get you up to there. And we've also got a couple of Twitter comments and questions that have come in that we want to get to. Mickey writes, hey, the Pods are 5 out in the wild card, 6 back in the West with 94 games to go. He says that is a lot of games left for an underachieving and talented team. That's the mentality. That's the right mentality.
Right.
94 games to go. You're 6 back.
Right.
It's not the end of the world, but obviously they're going to have to play better in order to move up.
You're going to have to, yeah. You've got to get it started sooner than later. I mean, there's just going to come a point where if you stay back this far, where it just becomes impossible to play 700 or 800 ball to get
right
back into the race.
The clock is ticking, as they say.
It is ticking. It is ticking.
Today would be a good day to get it going.
Right. And by the way, you know, we talked about last night's loss. If I could say one more thing. I think Pat Murphy's post-game comments handled that loss perfectly. I mean, he didn't dwell on stuff. He didn't get mad. He just sort of said, hey, it's over. It happened. It's over with. We got to move on.
Yeah. All right, our next Twitter question comes from Mike, and he wants to go all hitting coach on you here, Bill. He goes, don't you think the batters need to swing a bit more? Too many times they just watch pitches go by and are now down in the count. It's funny that you see this from Mike, because I think we get just as many questions about this as we do about guys swinging too early in the count.
Right.
You know, people are complaining either that they're swinging too often at the first pitch or that they're not swinging often enough at good pitches. Do you have a pervasive observation on this year? Do you find that the Padre hitters are being passive? Do you find they're being aggressive, or is it sort of up and down?
You know what I find? I find that they're missing an awful lot. I don't care when they're swinging, but there's a lot of strikeouts right now, and that's one thing. Two things concern me about this team right now are the number of strikeouts and the lower than expected on base percentage. And yes, they get a lot of home runs. They get when they get hits, they get them in bunches. But they also are among the league in strikeouts. I think they need to make more contact. They need to draw some more walks.
You know what's crazy is you're right. They're striking out a ton.
Right.
They're striking out a ton. But as of a couple of days ago, and so I'm sure it's still the case, they are still one of the top run-scoring teams in
right,
the National
right.
League. That's insane when you think about it. And it's sort of like the A's on the other side. Oakland, the worst record in the American League, but this great run differential. I mean,
right.
It's got to be close to plus 30 now
right.
at this point, if not more.
Got to be close to plus 40 now, to be perfectly honest.
After last night. And so what's up with that? And the thing is with the A's, basically, in a really, really general sense, they've been, when they win by a lot. When they lose close.
Right.
But for the Padres, they're scoring all of these runs, but still the record not where you would want it to be. And so some of that's got to come back to the timing that we've discussed so often. It seems like when they're scoring, they're not pitching. And when they're not scoring, they are pitching or not. And that's weird, because that's not such a simple thing to say, hey, they just need to be swinging more aggressively or they need to be more patient. It's like you're just still waiting for everything to come together for an extended period of time.
Right. I agree. But I do think that you look at some of their games and, you know, part of playing baseball is drawing a walk every once in a while. And they are not – that's one area when they – in a close game – where they're struggling to get runs, they're not getting runners on base to sort of break that up. So,
yeah.
I just like to – yeah, the one thing I would like to see is a little higher on-base percentage, to be perfectly honest.
Okay, so you're into the walks right now. That's your thing. You just want to see less strikeouts or fewer strikeouts and more walks.
Right.
All right, that's reasonable. By the way, that's a good thing to want to happen. Let's continue to roll on here with Twitter. Our buddy Gabe, I think he lives in like Idaho or Wyoming. I met him in spring training. He lives really up there somewhere. Maybe one of the Dakotas, Montana, somewhere like that. But anyway, Gabe says, what are your thoughts on Norris at first base? We're seeing that today. It'll be his second ever appearance at first base. 2 years ago with the A's, he played 4 innings there but did not start. So his first career start at first base. What do you think?
I really like it, because one, without Will Myers right now, you don't really have an option at first base. I know Solarte's played over there, but I don't think that's his best position at all. And if Norris can play there, it gives you some other options when there's a left-handed pitcher going particularly. I like taking a look at Norris at first base. Plus, it gives him a couple days break from catching. And, sometimes you take a day off. That helps a little bit. But if you get 2 days off from behind the plate, that helps a lot.
Cheyenne, Wyoming, by the way.
Is that where he is?
Yeah, second generation San Diego. Was born here, raised here. Gay buddy lives now in Wyoming. I knew it was one of those ones up there.
Wyoming's up there.
You know, it's all the way. It's basically Canada, right?
Right, close to the Dakotas.
Yes, near all that stuff. Idaho, Montana, the Dakotas, Wyoming, they're all up north. Gabe, good dude, and nice to hear from you. Thanks for checking in. One more tweet before the break, and I agree with this, by the way. Taz says, hey, if the Padres can't get things turned around, we just need to make every episode of Padres Social Hour an effort to get Taylor Swift on. Blooper, we haven't done one in a while. I haven't been here. What's the latest update on booking Taylor Swift for Padres Social Hour?
I haven't tweeted at her in a while. I really need to get on that.
You're slacking.
I am.
Did you follow her at least?
Yes.
Okay. Because originally he was tweeting at her, but he hadn't even followed her.
Right.
And she's big time.
So there's no way to get a dialogue going between the two.
I just think she's going to be like, who's this clown? Right. And, oh, he doesn't even follow me? Forget about
right.
it.
Right. But now that he's following her, she follows back, and then they get that message thing going.
There you go. You've got it all figured out, the
right.
message thing.
Because I follow her, she's not going to think I'm a clown?
Exactly.
That's a good point.
Fair. That's totally fair. Again, Taylor Swift is going to be performing here at Petco Park in August, and Blooper has guaranteed that he will get her on the show, either on the phone or on the couch, prior to that concert. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, you're going to be driving away co-hosts with a stick on that one.
Yeah, no, I know. Everybody's going to want to be hosting the show.
Yes.
Where people that hate the show will be like, hey, can I come that day? Can I come? Can I be there? She's a big deal. All right, extraordinary moments happen every night in baseball, but on one night, they all happen in one place. Don't miss the 86th All-Star Game. Coverage begins at 4 p.m. Pacific on Tuesday, July 14th, only on Fox. All the Royals you can handle. We'll talk about that when we come back. Padres Social Hour, presented by United.
Welcome back to the AMR studio. Live inside Petco Park, this is Padres Social Hour.
Welcome back, Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines with Bill Center. I'm Jesse Agler. Padres trying to get a game in Oakland. Thanks to John Baker for calling in a little bit earlier. Mentioned it before the break, more all-star voting information released this week, and it's like still 8 Royals out of 9 positions leading the way in the American League. And so Rob Manfred, the commissioner of Major League Baseball, was asked about this again this week. He said he is, quote, responsive and open to a change in the all-star game voting if, quote, we get a result that is not consistent with the goals of the system that is in place.
Which would be 7 Royals in the All-Star game.
I would say so. Obviously, there is some time for some things to happen here. Now, remember, it's all digital voting. So our friends at Major League Baseball Advanced Media, all they got to do, a couple quick keystrokes, and all of a sudden there are 3 Royals starting instead of 7. Not that I'm suggesting they would do that, but you never know. Anyhow, what do you make of this situation?
Well, it happened once before. It happened in 1957 when the fans were allowed to vote, and it was Cincinnati found a way to rig it. Actually, it was quite a brilliant move. But 7 Reds got voted in. The only non-Red to get voted into the All-Star game was Stan Musial. And the then commissioner, Ford Frick, said it's not going to happen. And he put Hank Aaron and Willie Mays in the starting lineup. And a couple of the other Reds were quickly, they were allowed to start, but then were quickly taken out of the game.
Yeah. So here's the deal. I like the idea of fan voting for this because as an exhibition game, and forget the fact that it counts in the World Series because it shouldn't and that's stupid and I don't think that'll last a long time. I think once, you know, Manfred has a little separation from Selig time-wise, he'll be able to just sort of pull that off and we'll all move on with our lives. But it's about the fans, this game. It really is.
Right.
It's about who the fans want to see. And so I'm all about fan voting. But when you get, you know, one group of fans that becomes so over the top about it. And again, in Kansas City, ain't nothing else to do right now.
Right.
It's 105 degrees outside. You're eating your barbecue and you're just voting on your iPhone all day. Then I do think, you know, a change is appropriate. And I'm not suggesting you take it away from the fans, but if this means you have to cap, you know, the number of starters from teams, or I don't know. I haven't given it a ton of thought. But I think this is a game for the fans. but you also shouldn't make it so that all the fans have to all vote a billion times in order to keep up with the one fan base that has decided, hey, this is the year we take over the thing. I like the fans being involved, but if you have to weigh the system, you know, where the fans get X percent of the voting, you know, weight, and maybe players get X and the media, whatever, I think the fans should be involved. This is for them. It is an exhibition at the end of the game, but nobody wants to see 8 Royals. Honestly, nobody wants to see 3 Royals outside of Kansas City
right.
in the starting lineup for
them. Yeah, I think there's got to be some formula where the fans thing is balanced against probably the players, managers, and coaches would be allowed to vote, and it would sort of balance out by percentages as to who had the bigger percentage. Because, no, nobody wants to see it.
No. You know, I don't hate the Royals.
Right.
I got no need for that.
And you talk it right. 1957 Reds, real quick. A Cincinnati Inquirer newspaper put ballots in each paper that were all filled out already, and all the fan had to do was return it. And that's how they got it.
That's it. All right, we'll take a break. But I want to remind you, please, Bill, to be at Petco Park next Friday, a week from tomorrow, for San Diego's biggest happy hour. It's back, folks. Padres Beer Fest. You got live entertainment plus $5 beers from a variety of local and national breweries. Plus, stay for the action as the Pods take on the Snakes at 7:10. Get your tickets at Padres.com/beerfest. Padres.com/beerfest. It'll be right there at the park. At the park.
Draws
or social
crowd.
Hour. Yeah, it does. Right after this.
You want some Padres talk?
We've got that.
Padres Social Hour returns now. Presented by United Airlines.
Welcome back. Padres Social Hour, just about 20 minutes away from first pitch in Oakland from the AMR studio in San Diego at Petco Park with Bill Center. I'm Jesse Agler. Want to get to some more tweets that have come in before we run out of time. We've also got our Supercuts head-to-head challenge coming up in a few minutes. So yesterday I wore my yellow Padres socks. I've got my gold and brown Padres socks. They're very bright and obnoxious. And I said, hey, these are my rally socks. This is going to get the winning streak started. And Bavacqua convinced me, if the Padres won last night, to wear them again today. Don't wash them, nothing. Just keep going with the socks. And obviously the Padres did not win. 16-2, in fact. And so East Village Times wants
those
to
would
know,
be yellow socks?
Gold.
Gold?
Yeah.
And what is the color of the Oakland A's?
Well, no, they were Padres socks. They're literal Padres socks.
They were Padres socks.
They have an SD on the side.
All right.
Yeah,
All right.
I got them from the team store
okay.
here.
Okay. I'm just saying.
East Village Time wants to know if I washed my lucky yellow socks. They were broken. I burned them, actually. I lit them on fire last night. Once Amarista came into pitch, I decided that's probably not going to happen again. Gilbert wants to know, Bill, what's going to turn this season around?
You know what turns teams around are a run of hot pitching. That's what you've got to have. And you've got to you know, it'd be great today if it started with Kennedy, because you've got Shields going tomorrow. I'm expecting Shields is going to have a really good start his next time out. I really am. And then you get Tyson. It takes a run of really good starting pitching.
Okay, that's a good answer. I like that. I thought it was going to be a near impossible question for you to answer, but you provided an eloquent response to Gilbert Contreras at Gilby24. Do you know an all-star mom? Well, Arm & Hammer and OxiClean, the official laundry detergent and stain fighter of Major League Baseball, are going to recognize one All-Star mom and send her and her family to the 2015 All-Star Game. So go to allstarmom.com and tell us what makes your mom so special. Allstarmom.com, and you could go to beautiful Cincinnati. We'll take a break. Come back. We've got our head-to-head challenge right after this.
From start to finish, it's the best 60 minutes of Padres talk you'll find anywhere. Now, from the AMR studio, it's more of Padres Social Hour.
Welcome back with Bill Center. I'm Jesse Agler, wrapping up Padres Social Hour, and we got to take a look at the starting lineup for Pat Murphy this afternoon in Oakland. It's a little bit different lineup presented by United Airlines. Proud to fly the Padres and fans to every away game, United. Fly the friendly skies. All right, Melvin Upton Jr. leading off for the second time in the last couple of days. He's in center field. Derek Norris batting second at first base. Matt Kemp is DHing. Yonder is at third. Hedges is catching and batting eighth. And it is a little bit different as the Padres try and shake it up and come up with a win. And so for our Supercuts head-to-head challenge, Bill, you will select a player. Blooper will select a player, and someone will earn a much-valued point.
I'm taking Ian Kennedy because they
You cannot take Ian Kennedy. He's not on that line. This is an American League ball game.
Oh, so we got to take some. Well, Kennedy's in the game.
All right, if you want Kennedy, I guess.
I want Kennedy because they
need Kennedy.
They need Kennedy to come up big today.
You're giving yourself no opportunity for offensive points.
Right.
But all right, Blooper, who you got?
Derek Norris.
I like that.
Right.
That's the Supercuts head-to-head challenge. At Supercuts, they pay attention to every detail, the cut, the lines, the hot towel finish, so you can feel sharp, clean, and ready to go. Find a Supercuts near you at supercuts.com. Enjoy the game, everybody.